Well, good morning, everybody. I think we'll go ahead and get started. We've got members getting coffee and hanging coats up, but we'll begin. So this is welcome to the first meeting of our governance committee, and I think the first thing we should do is approve the, do we have enough people in the room to approve the agenda? So could I have a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved. Second.
Been moved and seconded. Good job, guys. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Okay, so we have an agenda that we've approved. Let me take a moment to just set us up here before we launch into our conversation. And that's partly what I want to say. This is the beginning of a conversation. There's been a lot written about governance and its importance to a highly effective organization, regardless of what the mission of that organization is. Governance has a clear and important role to play in making the organization effective. Governance is the structure within which we do our work as board members. The agreements lay out in black and white how we define our roles and how we plan to proceed in our work. And they include general working assumptions as well as talk about who's responsible for what. Our task is to look at what already exists at WMATA on these topics, being mindful of all of the various recommendations that we've received in the past months, and update or create operating agreements that will stand the test of time. Given the fact that there are four new board members, this is really timely work. Using governance documents and the conversations they engender to orient new members is the best practice of effective boards and effective organizations. The questions and the observations of all the members, both new and old, will bring added value to our work. In addition, I do want to say that many of the documents we already have good government practices, good governance practices running through them. The process that we're engaging in today will help draw all of those into some important key documents that will form the backbone of WMATA board working agreements and understandings for the next years to come. Nobody, and I can say this with assurance, having spent a lot of hours with the people at this table and with our general manager as well, nobody at this table is new to board work. We've all done it in various places for various types of organizations. So I want to be sure that folks feel free in our conversations to share your experiences from other places, good and bad. Because there's lessons learned and there's things to take away from those. In my family, we have a saying that sometimes experience is a better teacher than the voice of experience. And this is a place where, in fact, I think that will be true. So let's begin our conversation. We have laid out in the agenda kind of an order in which we'd like to talk about things, and I think the place to start first is with the role of the governance committee. You have at your places a lift from our policies, or our procedures, that we adopted in January. This is the paragraph that was inserted into our procedures relative to the role of the governance committee. I know I just gave it to you this morning, so if people want to take a second and read it over. The question is, does this capture all of the things that we think belong to the governance committee? And if it does not, what items or responsibilities do you think should be added to that list?
I think this definition partially encompasses where we want to be, and I started thinking, and now I have to provide the sentence or statements, but let me give you the thought process, in that in seeing this as a standing committee, I see it as the body in which all issues relating to the management of the board and the role that it must play will come for discussion. And the only question that I ask now that I look back at this after we've adopted it is that the specific recommendations to the stakeholder piece might want to be framed in a more generalized piece so that it doesn't look at today, but maybe it looks more long-term. And I think that said, consider all stakeholder governance recommendations. And that's fine, but do we, does that include all the inputs that would be there? That's the only part that I'm seeing that may want to be discussed.
I think we should take a somewhat broader focus than just the governance committee. The whole process, which includes outside players, the board, and management, what that problem is, all has to work together. And there may be things that we want to bring into the culture and bring into the operation that might not necessarily fall in this committee, but might. I think that should be part of the definition process. Are we going to do strategic planning? Are we going to do performance reviewing? Are we going to do monitoring of how we're doing? Because this whole discussion to me about governance is merely a substitute for the fact that the region and many of the stakeholders are not happy with the outcomes. They couldn't just issue a report to say have better outcomes. So their response instead was to say have changes in governance. I think we need to look through that, do what needs to be done, but really focus on what can make for better outcomes.
Great point. I agree that this piece about the stakeholders probably needs to be written in a more broader manner to reflect that, at least for now, this committee might be the place where we make sure everybody comes together and that there's a conversation about whatever the topic is, because I think having spent some time going through our documents, we don't have any place that we've written down that. So let's use this as a vehicle, but it may in fact end up in ultimately under another committee, but this is our vehicle to have that conversation. So I think that's a great observation. One thing that's not here, and I think of the governance committee as a keeper of the whatever, the keeper of the procedures, the keeper of the bylaws, the keeper of the code of conduct, also the keeper of the strategic plan, if that's a task we decide we want to take on. In the keeper of, and having primary responsibility for the orientation of new members, that governance committees typically take that on, and that's a regular practice and an upkeep that they do. So I would slide that into the definition as well, that orientation of new members is a responsibility. Mr. Costa?
Yeah, I'd also add that one of the other factors that we hear about is how what we're doing in terms of encouraging public input and public outreach. So I think that's another component of this that I think we need to determine in terms of everything from the way we use our executive committee to whether we, you know, today we allow people to speak at the beginning of the meetings and whether that's effective or not, and how they provide input into a number of policy issues this board may be considering. So I think that's another item that we should consider.
Got it on the list. Okay. Yes, Jeff.
And capturing that thought and more, so I'm looking at the first sentence, and it's kind of concludes that we're doing all this in order to improve effective policymaking and oversight. Mm-hmm. I think we also could include in there to improve effective policymaking, communication, oversight, and outcomes. Because the outcomes piece is kind of what Mort was talking about, the communication piece is what Marcel was talking about, and I think we could put it right in that we're not just trying to improve our own policymaking and oversight, but really what the outcomes of that are, and also trying to improve how we communicate with the greater public, whether it be stakeholder groups, riders, the media, our general manager. It's the communication piece, I think, needs to be in there.
Great. It's a great suggestion. Anybody else have anything they want to add in at this point?
I assume when I read here board governing documents, that would include the adoption of permanent bylaws.
Yeah, and we'll get to that. There, I think we need to agree on what our set of documents are, so we'll get there. So if no one else has comments at this moment, here's what I'm going to propose we do as our process. We'll have a conversation. We'll gather all these comments. We'll go back, rewrite, and then bring it back at the next meeting, and people can kind of say, yep, we think we got it, or no, we didn't. The long-term game plan here is that we're gonna build our documents as we go. When we think that they have, they're kind of ready for public comment to be made on them, given the amount of interest there is, we'll go ahead and schedule that at a board meeting so that we have the speaker mechanism to let us take public comment. So that's the, if are people okay with that as a way to work through this? It makes sense to everybody? Okay. So put this one away and we'll move on to the next piece. The role and responsibility of the board and of the chairman, there's been a lot of talk about that. And actually, if you go through our procedures, we actually do spend some time both in our procedures and in the compact and a number of other documents talking about the role of the board. And when I say the role of the board, I mean the board corporate, okay? That's all of us together. The individual board member piece is in another document that we call the Code of Conduct. And I would propose that at some point we review that too. But for today, let's look at the role of the board corporate and then the role of the chair. Kathy Hudgens nicely pulled together for us a straw man of ideas. Lots of straw, she said. for us to at least start with, and that too is at your places. It's this one that's kind of there. So the board is on one side, the chair is on the other. And I think we should start with the board. So take a second to read through that, and then we'll talk about it. Mr. Downing.
Two thoughts. One small one, but I think would be helpful. In the first bullet, something that also relates to customer service. It's not simply safe and reliable, but customer friendly. I'm not sure what the right word is, but it should be part of our charge. The other is, and we're always reminded by counsel, that the board is the authority. And I think in our duties, we have to reflect the fiduciary responsibility for the institution, for its finances, for its physical condition.
Okay. Mr. Benjamin.
I very much agree with Mr. Downey's comments. I would also, on the first one, take the word greater out. I like what's there, and I like the suggestions that he makes, but
absolutely.
It's an absolute. It's not a changing thing.
It
will change, but that's where we want to go. And the second part is, as we are part of the authority, I think it's important in the second one to reflect the fact that we are, in fact, the authority. And I would put the word authority before activities that build knowledge, awareness, and support for the organization. There are many things that we as board members can do
to be part of other activities that go on, not just board meetings, where we are supportive of the staff and of the image of this authority.
On the second one, part of this reads to me like it's about individuals as opposed to the corporate entity. Mm-hmm. And so I would just make that suggestion that there may be a way to adjust this. So, and I like your insertion of authority, Peter. I think that's a really helpful comment. So I think we need to make this one more corporate than it currently reads. Yes, Mr. Boston.
Just a few points. First, I think there's this issue, there's always been this issue about the role of individuals on the board and their ability to direct staff mm-hmm. versus the board itself in terms of making decisions. And I think we need to have some discussion about kind of our role as individuals and whether I know we don't speak for the authority, but I think we need to make that very clear in terms of, our individual responsibilities and then kind of the collective voice of the board in terms of guiding the authority itself. I think the other thing is, this is kind of I think at some point in time we have to compare this list to the roles and responsibility of the CEO, because what we're trying to do here is delineate various responsibilities, and I think it's hard to determine the role of the chair vis-a-vis the CEO, vis-a-vis the board and the individuals of the board. And so I think it'd probably be a helpful discussion and helpful to put all three or four outlines together and then ask questions about, whether crossover and whether we're being clear and whether we're being clear about delineating authority, because I think that's where all the questions are. And I think just having the two here is probably not enough.
Great. We can do that for the next conversation.
Another part of this we might want to approach is, to me, the more specific roles and then down to the more individual roles, because I think that goes to sort of the second one and how you were looking at that one. And that kind of takes some of these and make them what are the specific board responsibilities, that is the things that we intend to see the board accomplish and we accept as responsibilities, and then how that individually, and so maybe taking these and separating them into a specific and then a more individual set of responsibilities. And I think you're right about the CEO, because my last thought when I, and these were thoughts going on a piece of paper, my last thought with the last one requires that, but the statement itself is, I think, one that is a board statement that might then go well with a further working through the CEO piece. This doesn't happen without us knowing what it is.
Mr. McKay?
Yeah, on the third bullet, commit to become more knowledgeable of WMATA's mission, I don't think it's strong enough. I think actually we should always act in a manner that enhances and promotes WMATA's overall mission. I think we're all knowledgeable of what it is, but I think we need to send a strong message that our actions are towards improving and enhancing WMATA's overall mission as a transit agency, and I think we can strengthen that, be a little more clear in that one.
Can you read your sentence again?
I would just say act in a manner that promotes and enhances WMATA's overall mission. I think it's a much stronger statement than what's there. It accomplishes the same thing, but acknowledges that we're knowledgeable of the mission. It's actions speak louder than words, and so we ought to be acting consistent with that.
Mr. Benjamin.
I think that's a very good place to put Mr. Downey's idea of the fiduciary responsibility, have those tie together.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Ms. Porter, did you have your hand up? Ms. Porter.
I would put the fiduciary responsibility as a separate responsibility, because I think it is one of our primary responsibilities and deserves sort of to be set out by itself. Don't mean to disagree with you, but actually I do.
Well, does anybody, that's an interesting idea. What are the primary responsibilities, and do we think they're, from all of our points of view, do we think they're captured in this list? Or, if you think about what's the big stuff we're supposed to really pay attention to, I'm policymaking is, of course, you know, governing through policy, the development of good, clear policy is a big part of our role. I'm not sure that that's exactly here. Ms. Hewlett.
Well, actually, I agree with Kathy Porter, too, that about the fiduciary responsibility, because I think that should be a standalone responsibility, because it's imperative that we comply with that, and that's not always easy to do.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we have to do some unpopular things in order to be responsible and adhere to our fiduciary responsibilities, and I think that's just imperative that we keep that separate and apart.
Okay. Mr. Benjamin?
Yeah, just thinking about how you've just been wording this, Ms. Hines, I do think there's a broader statement, and it's one that I'm not going to make correctly, but one of our responsibilities is to act in the best interests of the authority,
mm-hmm.
of the people of this region, and of the region in general. So we have to be supporting the authority, transportation, the people, our riders, the people, and the region overall, and I think having a broad statement about making decisions that are in the interests of the region is something that's very, very important here.
Mr. Downs.
I think it's inescapable for the board to avoid its legal responsibilities that are set out for the board. The one of the primary is the creation with the general manager and adoption of the budget. The other is the legal responsibility the board has for making a final determination on the fare structure. Those are the bread and butter of what the board does, and I think we need to recognize it on the front end.
Mm-hmm.
Budget, fares, the broader context that Peter is talking about, I agree with, but the implementation comes through those two actions.
Mm-hmm. So one is perhaps a statement of overall principle, and then the other is more specifically, these particular things are the, you know, day-to-day, as you said, bread and butter sort of operational things.
Yeah, we're going to exercise our fiduciary responsibility. Those are key tools, not the only tools, but key tools.
Right.
One other thought. I agree with the principles here of good working relationships and speak with one voice, but I think it's also important that we have debate, we have open consideration of issues, and then settle on a single course of action. So we commit ourselves to open discussion.
Actually, Mr. Downs raised an interesting area, and that is, I think you would... I would at least add service and the definition of the size of the system. You know, we do accept or define what our rail and bus system looks like, and we do determine service levels, which are the other parts of that. You can subsume everything under budget, but I think those are very critical parts of what we do.
Service levels and what was the other one, Mr. Benjamin?
I'm sorry, levels and we adopt a general plan. It's the system and the system definition. What is our system?
Okay, thanks.
Would you probably would wrap that into the planning responsibility?
Planning. I mean, it's operations too. It's the what are we going to operate? When are we going to operate it? Where are we going to operate it? Both bus and rail.
Okay.
Second, I'm sorry. Go ahead,
Ms. Porter.
Just in looking this and reading and listening to the discussion. It seems to me that there are maybe five or six general principles embodied here and several other things that sort of add to those principles. The first one was the safe and reliable system, which I agree is maybe our primary responsibility. I think it's very appropriately listed first. The second one would be the fiduciary responsibility. The third one is the one that sort of incorporates our individual responsibilities toward the board itself. I'm not putting them in any particular order. I'm just sort of going through here. And I like the idea that the enhancement that we act in a manner that promotes and enhances WMATA's mission. I think that's a really good way to state it. But I think under that, regular attendance and participation in board meetings, building a good working relationship among board members, promoting open discussion, speaking, you know, to the public or whatever, how we want to phrase that, with one voice, all sort of are parts of our acting in a manner, and I assume when it says act in a manner, it means individually toward the board with one voice. And then the next principle would incorporate what Mr. Benjamin said about planning and developing board priorities and targets, and I like the idea of the annual report to the customers and stakeholders is sort of our planning function. Providing opportunities for customer and stakeholder input, I think, is very important, and actually I would add to that perhaps representing the voices of the customers and stakeholders toward the authority. And then the last one would be some statement of our relationship with the CEO, and I think the one that's here is a good one. So it's sort of those things. There's sort of six basic principles and several other things that are helpful in further elaborating on those principles that are incorporated in these here, and I think that might be a helpful way to lay it out.
Nice grouping, actually. I think that would help us sort them. Mr. Downey.
Before we ultimately adopt this, and it will be a work in process, I think it would be helpful to ask council to look at the compact and make sure that we have touched the things that are, in fact, statutory responsibilities.
Absolutely.
Including ones that you and Peter mentioned. But I don't know if there are others out there that we need to reflect.
I think that's a great idea. And as I said, I spent some time just going through the things that I had. And there are references in the compact. There are references in our procedures. There are references in the code of conduct, all of which I think we need to be sure those ideas get in here. Maybe we can do it with far fewer words. But the bylaws basically become a much clearer statement where you don't have to go from document to find those things. So I think that's very helpful.
I think in this process, because I think this is a process sort of with the general manager, the legal, and the like, and I think it's important that if there's some input from that side, the general manager side, because this is his board, and this is a working relationship and partnership, so that we're covering those things and understanding we're clear in articulating how to maintain a relationship with our responsibilities.
So I guess really, Mr. Charles, that's an invitation to chime into the conversation if you wish.
Yeah, and I'll take the opportunity as we go along to do that. But you know, so far it sounds great. So.
All right. Any other suggestions relative to this for today? I guess one thing, and Marcel, I think, kind of referred to this earlier, and we will see if we can't do a crosswalk kind of thing for our next meeting, because I think that would be helpful. But as a new person, I don't know kind of what the old way of operating was relative to working within the organization. You know, board members individually, I mean, we represent jurisdictions. Jurisdictions have relationships, whether it's around a project or some other, you know, and I'm thinking more bigger stuff as opposed to the constituent. You know, I get the letter from the person saying the bus didn't come on time. And I do think figuring out that piece of it or what the sort of protocols or practices are that we want the board to follow when there is an issue, and writing that down so at least we start there, is also important to do, and very important for those of us who are new, who don't necessarily have relationships in the organization other than maybe somebody in our county works for MoMATA and says, hey, I know the right person for you to talk to. So I guess I don't know whether those of you who've been on longer than I want to talk about that a little bit, so there's some sense of the group, or whether we want to ask the general manager to come back to us with a proposal about how that should work. But I want to put that marker out there that I certainly don't feel able to even comment on that today, or maybe even a year from now, Mr. McKay.
Well, I think we actually have commented in a very strong way. The final statement in this is a very good one. And I think asking the general manager to come back with some protocol ideas makes sense. But the statement is very powerful, and I think right on key with where we need to be, which is respecting each other's role, the CEO and the board, the board focusing on policy and respecting boundaries. I think actually where we've had trouble in the past is when we haven't done those things. The board has lost sight of its overarching policy perspective, and has not really respected boundaries of the difference between what the board is tasked with doing and what the staff is tasked with doing. And I think the statement is powerful, it's right on, and I think it gives an opportunity for the general manager to come back with to us with maybe some logistics or some protocol on how you actually do that. But I think this is what we want as a policymaking board. We're setting out this is the overall policy we're going to have, perfectly germane for the staff to come back and say, okay, this is how we're going to help the board fulfill that policy, and then we can adopt that. But I think this is a major first step in the right direction.
Yeah, I would echo that. But also, I think this is an opportunity to start with a clean slate, and that I think and I think we could construct something not necessarily attached to the past that makes sense in terms of moving this agency forward. So I really think we should take this opportunity. I also note on your work program there are opportunities to talk about the relationship between the board and the CEO, and I think a lot of those discussions can take place under that rubric.
Yeah, I think you raised, you know, a good point, and probably more likely should be under the discussion of the individual board members. But in fact, most of the board members are representative of jurisdictions, and that's part of the policymaking process. But I think we need to encompass that in the idea of bringing things to the board to be resolved.
I just want to reference that, and I pulled out the procedures, and I can't find the statement, because it was, and I was thinking in terms of when we get to bylaws and the delineation of bylaws and procedures, maybe that's also an opportunity to articulate it. And I think at some point we had something that talked about where and how you initiate a true process piece, how you initiate actions that are truly operational actions, for example, versus individual board members moving through and saying down to the next level of supervision, I want to have this conversation. And so some way to develop that in either probably in a procedure I'm somewhere in delineating it versus here, because this is at the high level, defining that role.
Okay. So, yes, Mr. Ben.
I think the board made a policy statement about the creation or the change in the general manager's title to general manager and CEO. I think I like Marcel's comment about starting with a blank slate. I think it would be good for this board to declare what its values are about lines of communication, who talks to the general manager, the limits on conversations that are expected about conversations between individual board members and members of the senior staff that report to the general manager. I think we all accept those as values on the board. I think it will serve everybody well to make those clear, and an agreement with the general manager about those value statements. This has been a perennial problem for as long as I have been around this board, and if this is an opportunity to have a clean slate, but start with a clean slate and get it right, and then hold each other accountable for performance within that value set.
So, Mr. Sarles, I think I heard two requests from you, for you all. One is give us some protocols around working jurisdictional problems that where we need to be able to have that. And then the second one is to kind of lay out channels of communication and I guess processes and procedures around that. Now, let me just ask this question. These would be proposals back to us. Then we would have the conversation where we kind of clarify and so we're all in agreement. And then at that point, it becomes part of our package kind of, that would ultimately go to the board and get either. Well, I mean, we have a lot of choices about where things go. We will, I think, create bylaws. We do have procedures. We also have a code of conduct. So, I mean, we have some choices about where we place things based on what we decide the role of those various documents are. Mr. Charles.
I just heard a third one, drop a list of CEO responsibilities.
Yes.
Okay. We'll do that.
Okay, great. Mr. McKay.
I just want to piggyback one thing. I don't want to get too far down in the weeds, but I think it's important. And you mentioned in the beginning we all serve on boards, and none of them are perfect. By any means. That's kind of the nature of the board. We need to recognize that. But as we put in the draft responsibilities, the speaking with one voice, I think it's important for staff and helpful for staff that when they speak to us as one board. And in doing that, when board members make requests for information, that information that comes back from the staff and of any request we make comes to the entire board. If we're going to speak with one voice, we need to be all subject to the same information. We need to know when requests are made and what they are for information, and responses from the staff just uniformly ought to come to the entire board for information, if nothing else. And I think that's a major step forward in speaking with one voice, is making sure that everybody has the same information as a starting point. I think it's a good protocol for staff. Certainly works in the jurisdiction I'm most experienced with, and that a request from an individual board member is treated as a board request and the response comes to the board.
That's a great observation. Mr. Benjamin.
This area that we're discussing, I think, is also an area in which the secretary to the board can play a very substantial role in facilitating the exchange of information between staff and the board. And I hope we'll make that a major part of what goes on here.
Another great observation. Ms. Porter.
One practice that has worked well in the jurisdiction that I'm from is to require all members of the board or the council to make requests and comments through, in this case, the CEO, unless the CEO designates another person. So the default would be that all of our requests for information would go through the CEO unless that person has designated someone else. And as has happened in a couple of cases where there's been a request to convey certain information through the public relations office. I'm still not up on what the names of everything's are, but that would be the idea. In certain cases, you know, we would get direction that this kind of information should go to this place. But in cases where you don't know, it all goes through Rich. But of course, that means that you end up getting a lot of email.
Yeah. So again, I think that can be part of what you propose to us, Mr. Charles. But I think a single, however you want to do that, as long as it's clear to us and we can operationalize it, that would be terrific. Anybody have anything else on this before we turn our page over? So I have much written. I hope other people are taking notes, and we will, you know, work on this and bring it back. And as Marcel requested, we'll try to put it in a three-way so we can look across and make sure where we're making those lines. Okay, so on the back of this sheet are, again, thanks to Kathy Hudgens, a beginning of a chair responsibility. This is the one area, I will tell you, when I went through our documents, there's not very much written at all. And in the interest of full disclosure, I would say that both of the boards I've served on in my jurisdiction, which had major fiduciary responsibilities, had chairmen, rotating chairmen, where nothing was written down either when I first went on the board. So I've been in this writing down the role of the chair thing twice already. And I think it's really important. I think it is clarifying to, I think of the chair as first among equals, there, you know, and from my point of view, the role of the chair is to facilitate the work of the board. That is the fundamental role of the chair. There are lots of, you know, bits and pieces around that, but the chair doesn't, and the chair speaks for us. I mean, I think those are the two big things. So having said that, I don't know if you all in your jurisdictions have been through this or in your life have been through this, trying to figure this out, but I think Kathy gives us a good list to begin with, and that's all it is. It's just, it's another straw man. So go ahead, take a minute to read it, and then we can talk about it.
I like what you just said, Ms. Hines. I do think a major role of our board chair is and should be to facilitate the work of the board, to find common ground, to find consensus, to develop consensus. It's that job of working with the board to move the board's actions forward that is the really critical part. That's the leadership role. But it's a leadership role, as you say, of first among equals, as opposed to somebody who sets policy and goes off on his or her own doing that.
Yeah, I would agree strongly on the thought that leadership is a quality we all need from the chair, and we should expect it and be willing to work with the chair in the leadership role. I think it's been confusing in the past as to whether it was leadership or simply consensus or whether it was the general manager, but I think it's very important that the chair be the leader of the board in its policy activities. I had a question on the discussion of the item that says represents the board as the primary spokesperson. I assume that is the spokesperson on behalf of the board, not a spokesperson on behalf of the authority. But there's clearly some understanding we need to have there that this is another place where speaking with one voice is an important characteristic. So somehow I think that needs to be reflected.
Mr. McCabe.
I agree with Mr. Benjamin's early comments about consensus building, but the consensus building has to be towards, you know, the overall mission of the entire organization, as we talked about before. And I think the language that we had is responsibility for board members ought to be reflected in the chair as well, that we're building consensus towards enhancing and improving WMATA's overall mission in the region. And I think that's an important piece to put there. I think, you know, most chairs have acted in a very positive regional perspective, promoting the overall agency, but I think we should document that in the chair responsibilities.
Okay. Other comments? Mr. Downs.
I know we will address it later in the governance process, but I want to put a placeholder on it about the chair responsibilities, and that is around the management of the potential for the use of a jurisdiction veto. Well, we cannot change that outside of a change to the compact. We can, among ourselves, agree to processes that may be equivalent to mediation, about that, that are more predictable and accountable for how the board tries to manage those issues as a board. And I think that falls on the chair in terms of leadership for that.
Ms. Porter?
I like this list, and I think the list incorporates sort of three basic things that I think are the three-way responsibilities of the chair. The first one, and I like the way you said it, facilitates the work of the board. And there's several things about the chair's in here about the chair's relationship to the board. The second one is the relationship between the board and the CEO. And there's a couple of things here. And then the third one is the relationship between the board and the media customers and external stakeholders. And I think those are the three aspects. And probably all of these other things are specific delineations of those sort of three different aspects of the chair's role.
Again, thank you for giving us category. That's really helpful. Easy way to organize it. Other thoughts? Mr. Donnelly.
further thought, both on the chair and the board, I don't see a reference on either of those to accountability. And I think we need to sort of focus on who is accountable for results. I think it fits in with the idea of an annual report, but it may fit in other places as well. So something to say, who's accountable?
Right. Who and to whom? Okay. All right, that's great. Some boards that I've been on have a regular practice, maybe twice a year, of sitting down and saying, okay, what do we do for the last 6 months, and how do we think it went? So it's kind of, there's a board self-evaluation or a board self-reflection, and if the, and I'm back on the board, but I'm saying this because so I don't forget, but that becomes a chairman's responsibility to make sure that that is a regular part of the work. Often that is done in executive session because it's really about the performance of individual board members and how we work together. But I do think in the scope of evaluating the CEO, evaluating the board secretary, reflecting on our own work is also an important part of being a high-functioning board.
But I'm also thinking about the broader public out there.
Yes.
Yeah, the elected officials, right, and all who say, how are we doing? And I think we have to say, who is really responsible for taking the criticism or the credit and identifying how we're going to be doing better in the future?
Right, and that may take us all the way back into that governance committee question that we had in the beginning, which is, you know, is that the right place to manage those kinds of things and review what we've been doing? Mr. McKay?
Yeah, I think the first, and it's reworded now, I don't know the exact verbiage, we're going to come back with it, but the first affirmative statement under board responsibilities that also talks about accountability, financial security, we talked about communications, a lot of other things, that first affirmative statement ought to be the same under board responsibilities as it is under chair responsibilities, to set a framework for everything that falls below that. And we deliberately included accountability, transparency, financial security. We talked about budgeting and other things. But for consistency, so that the board and the chair are on the same page, I think that first affirmative overarching statement ought to be the same on both. And then the stuff that follows it, of course, would be different.
Great. That's great. Anybody else? Mr. Charles, anything you want to chime in on? Okay. Are we ready to leave this one then and come back next time and take a look at what we do with it? All right. You guys are doing, we're doing great. all right, now what I'd like to look at is this work plan, which was the back of the packet that you got. Yes, Mr. Benjamin.
Ms. Hines, before you start on that, I want to just check with Ms. Hewlett. Is that okay? I did want to announce that I will be leaving the board in the immediate future, and that may color some of my remarks here. I have been informed that another person will be nominated to take my place on the board, at this time of transition, the administration wants to have a clean slate and a new group of people, and that is going to take place very, very quickly. So just wanted to make sure everybody knew that.
Oh, Mr. Benjamin, thank you for letting us know. I think we're all a little speechless. You led us through a really intense process with the manager search, and you've been, from my point of view, an incredible font of information as a brand new member. So I will definitely miss your voice. Thank you for all that you've done for this agency for so many years.
Well, if I could just second that, that you have been an incredible help to me, especially, just sort of in getting me up to speed on what the board does and what the board is required to do. And I probably would not have been able to get involved as quickly and as completely as I have if you had not been such good guidance to me. And so I will miss you a great deal.
I am speechless. but
And this is imminent, I understand. And I say imminent, that maybe before we get to another meeting, is that what you're saying? Okay, that is very, very exciting. It's very, I'm sure that the judgment that was made with a larger concern for the representation of Maryland, but I really think that your expertise in representing the jurisdiction, but being one who has such substantial knowledge, that has such substantial knowledge of the authority, has been a benefit. And I hope that kind of judgment stays within the realm of who comes next, because I think it is very important that we have someone who is from not only the operational side, but from a community side, that is engaged in understanding what that has been. So I want to thank you for your service, but I'm really disappointed at this point.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I, too, have so enjoyed working with Peter. He's just been a tremendous advocate for WMATA, for the stakeholders, for the region, actually. And it was great to have him as a partner, as my counterpart, representing the state of Maryland on this board. And I, too, learned an awful lot from Peter over the years. And so I thank him for that. And I would like to add that it's been reported that many times already that I was thinking to leave as well. My term was up, both Peter's and my terms were up last June. And so it's not news to most people that I would intend to leave as well. But as far as I know, I don't know where we are in the replacement process. So that could be imminent or may not be imminent. So, but I just wanted to clarify that, since most people know already anyway, that our terms were up and that they have been looking for replacements, and perhaps they're underway.
Yes, Mr. Downs.
So, Peter, I can't remember when you weren't here. And I go back quite a ways. Personally, I will miss your presence on this board. You've been great about intellect, finance, personal relationships, leadership. I'll miss you. Sorry you're leaving.
If I could just associate myself with the same remarks. I can remember when Peter wasn't on this board. But we were working together in a different relationship. So it's been a long run. It's been a great run. And I hope we will continue to get your advice and counsel from wherever you happen to be sitting.
Minister Acosta.
I'll just add my thanks to Mr. Benjamin. We started a year ago coming in with major decisions on budget. And I think Peter's leadership as chair during that time was exquisite, and it was difficult. There were a lot of difficult decisions that had to be made, and he was put in a very difficult spot. And I would like to thank him for his leadership, but also his personal attention when we were new in terms of learning about this agency and everything that we needed to know before we walked into that decision process. So thank you, Peter.
Mr. Benjamin.
Thank you, Mr. Custer, and all of you who've made comments. You've been very kind, and I really, really appreciate it. As you know, and as both Mr. Downs and Mr. Downey noted, I have been associated with this authority for more than 25 years. And before that was with the Federal Transit Administration and was associated with the authority in a different way, at which time I worked with both Mr. Downs and Mr. Downey in a different role. I have always loved this organization. I have respected the people who are here, who are really special and are very dedicated and care enormously for this transit system, for the services they provide, and what this system can do for the region. I have always tried to act in the best interests of Metro, of transportation, and of the people of this region, and I hope that my history here reflects that, And I very much appreciate having had the opportunity to make a difference for all the people here and for your kind words, which recognize that. Thank you.
May I say something?
Yes, you may, Mr. Searles.
I think a large part of the reason I'm here is due to Peter. It's been a 10-month transition. When I was being hired as the interim general manager, Peter and I talked about this was going to be a partnership. I don't want to relive the history of last year, but there were certainly extraordinary challenges for WMATA. And as a person new to this area, not new to the business, but new to this area, and dealing with a different type of board, jurisdictions, and that sort of thing, I received a lot of wise guidance and counsel from all of you, but especially from Peter. He helped me along. He helped me recognize the shoals I might not otherwise have recognized. He gave me a lot of just great advice, insight, and based on his board membership as well as his many years here as a staff member and a leader in the organization. And without that advice, counsel, and leadership on the board, we would not have been as successful in the last 10 months in getting from where we were to where we are today. And I just truly appreciate everything you did, Peter. Thank you.
You will be missed, Mr. Benjamin. And Ms. Hewlett, you will be missed too. As this plays out, both of you have been terrific. In the short time I've been here, I've learned from both of you tremendously. So, thank you. Okay. A deep breath, I guess. let me direct your attention to this chart on the back of the package that you received. Before I go any further, I do want to acknowledge that in putting all of this together, Ms. Porter and I, who are the chair and co-chair of the group, assisted by Ms. Hudgens, spent quite a bit of time, as did staff, looking at the variety of recommendations that have come from a number of different groups. And you do have, as part of this package, a summary of what those are. And we put this work plan together, mindful of those recommendations, but also using our best judgment about what we need to do to get to strong governance. So you're not going to find these tracked exactly, but I think if the people who wrote them look at them, they'll know that we got the message. I did also want to let you all know that prior to this meeting, we invited all of the folks who have written recommendations to join us today. And we do have people from most of the groups with us in the room. I see Mr. Dinegar and Mr. Dyke from the Board of Trade. We've got Penny Everline from the RAC. We reached out to the GAO folks, and we invited the League of Women Voters, and our board secretary did an admirable job of letting people know we were having this first conversation. Who's here? Anne's not here. We reached out to the work group as well that had done their sort of plan. So we're mindful, but this is our agenda, and this is the work that we need to do to put ourselves as a group in a better spot. So you can sort of see the list of tasks or discussion topics, as well as some discussion about the products that we anticipate they could be integrated in. And I think this is maybe the moment to sort of talk briefly among ourselves about the difference between bylaws, procedures, code of conduct, and strategic plan. Because in this plan, Kathy and I just kind of picked which thing we thought they should go in. I'll give you my frame up of the difference between those, and Kathy should feel free to correct, but here's my thinking about the difference between them. Bylaws are a more permanent set of operational agreements. You can change bylaws. Usually you have to have a bigger than simple majority to do so. And certainly with our jurisdictional things, we want to think through how jurisdictions are represented. But they don't change all the time. Procedures are sort of our agreements among ourselves about how we're going to work through and get our work done. But again, they focus more on the board corporate, and here's the way we approach various things, in my opinion. The code of conduct grabs at those issues that are particular to how a board member behaves and becomes sort of the underlying set of agreements among ourselves about how we'll treat each other, how we work with the organization, you know, how we handle ourselves personally as opposed to the board corporate. And then, of course, strategic planning is where do we as the board, working with management, see this organization going, and how do we track, and how do we publicly account for those changes over time? So that's my kind of rule of thumb. I didn't write it down, but open to people saying, yeah, we think that works, because that we just need some kind of operational thinking about it so we know where to put things as we move this forward. Mr. Downs.
We've mentioned it briefly. I was surprised to find that there is still not a codification process for the resolutions of this board. The actions that the board takes over a year are enrolled as resolutions. We have not codified the resolutions, apparently, of the authority practically back to its founding. We have 35 or 40 years worth of resolutions that are in file cabinets, and on 3x5 cards. A professional codification process, most jurisdictions at the city, county, state level do this to make the governing process more transparent, not only for the board, but for all the stakeholders and citizens. It's not an inexpensive undertaking, but I think it is a visible commitment the board can make to establishing more formalized procedures based on the decisions that the board has made. And if recodification and adoption of those makes that a more rational framework for governance, then I think that's a necessary step that will underlie both the bylaws and the procedures of the board and the authority.
Ms. Hutchins.
It seems like, and having had this discussion before, it seems like an appropriate time, either when this comes forward for adoption, that we would have an additional action that would do that, because I think it requires an action to do that, so we can have an additional action that would do that.
Okay.
I think we all agree that it's a piece that we don't want to go on memories or find the cards, but I also think it's it's also a very important thing to do as an ongoing part of the governance piece, so that you can keep that up to date.
I think that is a, yes, Mr. Yule.
Yeah, I certainly agree, and I guess what should happen is that as quickly as possible, because this is something that's very simplistic. It just requires a board policy that just simply says that every time there's a resolution, there's a codification process to make it happen. In terms of going back 30, 40 years, we can handle that too, but I think we need something ASAP to deal with where we are today and then as we move forward.
Perhaps, Ms. Porter.
I was just going to say I would be interested in the general counsel's opinion of this idea and this process, because I really have no idea what is entailed or whether this would be sort of helpful from her perspective.
Okay.
I think it's a great idea. An absolutely great idea. And, yeah. Well, actually, not so much. I mean, my office, in fact, Phil Scott is here, has already done what we call our file schema for other document retention, which is also a pet project of mine, but it's difficult to find funding for all of the authority's documents. But actually, I think it would be a good starting place for the codification of the board's resolution. And in the process of that, it would probably also be a good idea to revisit some of those resolutions, because the reality is, they get lost in the midst of time, as Mr. Downs has said, and the board might want from time to time to revisit whether there's any remaining vitality to those resolutions. So I think it's a great idea, and we talked about it before, but never really gone down that path. So I applaud it. I think it would be very helpful to do that, put them in a framework that they're actually accessible, and at the same time, perhaps revisit ones that have become archaic and no longer needed.
Perhaps we can ask you to bring us some more thinking about how we might go about that. And when I did go, someone had told me I could get them if I went to the website. So last night I went poking around and I actually couldn't find, other than like specific ones, I couldn't find a place that they all were. So,
well, they are all on our intranet internally under the departmental section under the board secretary. We and council go there quite a bit, so.
But I can't get it if I'm at
perhaps
home.
Not, right, perhaps
which is,
not.
Which you'd is have one to, of the issues.
Yeah. But there's a way that you can be set up to get it.
Well, that would be good.
I'm sure. I'm sure. But they're,
sorry.
They're organized by year and by number. So just chronologically by each year. There is a search function that works sometimes okay and sometimes not so great. So,
well, maybe one thing is I certainly would appreciate knowing what that way is so that I could look at them at home. And I don't know if others would either, but one of the other thoughts I had relative to governance is there may in fact be some in there that are pertinent to our discussion of governance. Not being able to look, I can't ascertain one way or the other. So I guess I'd ask you, Ms. O'Keefe, if somebody on your staff could look at them with an eye, if there's anything we should know about that exists.
We will take a look to see if there's anything that the board might take into consideration. I've never focused specifically on that topic, so I can't really tell you right off the bat.
Who knows whether over 40 years somebody did think, write it down.
I think the board has handled governance each year through its rules of procedure adoption. That's largely how that topic has been addressed.
All right. So, Mr. Downs, we got a placeholder marker to get to that as an action of this group. I do think the governance committee is the right place to at least work through that, and then if we flag issues or things that need to be retired, they can get referred to the various committees for further discussion. Seem like a game plan? Okay. So to return to the three that I was talking about, or four, anybody have a problem with sort of that, those breaking them out that way? And think so we'll know where to park various things as we move through this process?
I certainly support that idea that we don't want to put things in the compact if we can avoid it, because that's impossible or nearly impossible to change. But there should be some degree of things that you can expect, absent a debate about them, will be the same this year, next year, the year after. So I would look forward to figuring out which belongs there. But I think a certain number of things absolutely belong in bylaws.
Yep. Okay. Anybody else on that? Okay, so looking at these discussion topics, is there any topic that folks want to add to this list? Mr. McKay.
Well, it's not adding, but there's one that just, maybe this is being an elected official, but just makes me cringe. And that is R, allow riders to contact individual board members. I've been inundated, thankfully, for 3.5 years, so I don't think we want to allow. We want to encourage riders to do that. And S, I've been directly responding to riders since the day I was sworn in to serve on this board. And so, again, we want to be encouraging. Some of our best ideas come from our riders, encouraging them to communicate with the board and requiring us to directly respond to them, of course, with staff assistance. But I think that's one of the best ways to improve communication. So I just just want to point that out, because certainly if this document is circulated, I certainly wouldn't want anyone thinking that we're allowing, but we're actually encouraging our riders to do that.
Great, and I think the thing that is important here kind of goes back to some of our conversation before about everybody knowing what's going on. So I get stuff in my office, you get stuff in your office, but our protocols have us send it into WMATA to get response, and then so that. But I think the point here is, do we have the right mechanisms in place that communicate to riders how they can talk to board members, and do the board members feel that they're supported adequately in the response back, right? So this is really about, is our system of communication working the way this group wants it to work? So really ineptly worded, I would agree with you. Okay. Anybody else have anything? Mr. Benjamin.
I may have missed it somewhere, but is there a reason why limit jurisdictional veto doesn't have an entry?
Because it requires a compact amendment. There's a asterisk down there at the bottom.
I noticed others also had the asterisk. I just wondered, you know, like increase the chair term to 2 years, which doesn't require one, but, you know, if you made it officially 2 years, it would. Don't you think that's worth some discussion or some role in this process?
I'd leave that. Let's hear what people think. I didn't think we could do much about it, quite honestly, although someone suggested we have some mediation and process around it. Mr. Downey.
I think it is possible to articulate a process that we have as an expectation with each other that declares that an issue is kind of at an impasse about a jurisdiction's interest, and the jurisdiction is thinking about a veto, declares it to the chair. The chair attempts some informal arbitration about how that issue might be discussed, even to the point of some formal mediation, an assurance that the board members who are in the process of trying to exercise a jurisdiction of veto have the support of their appointing authorities in doing that. And then, if all of that fails, then the jurisdiction exercises its veto. I know that vetoes are seldom exercised. The reality is it is part of a negotiation process among the jurisdictions. I think it's a legitimate process. But I think our expectations among ourselves about not surprising each other in the middle of a meeting saying, well, I guess we're going to exercise a jurisdiction veto on this vote, is disrespectful to all of the other members and the jurisdictions without some serious board conversation about ways to mediate that. I think that goes to process, a set of procedures that while we can't change the charter, we can, or the compact, we can agree to procedures that make this more predictable.
Mr. Benjamin.
I guess I would ride a little bit on Mr. Downs's comments. It strikes me, and I won't have an opportunity to comment in the future about some of these things, that the jurisdictional veto is inherent in the way this place is organized, whether or not there is one, because we are funded because each jurisdiction is willing to contribute. And at any point, a jurisdiction can say, if you're going to do that, I'm just not going to put any money in, or I'm not going to put money in for that purpose, or whatever. So it's an inherent part, and it was originally put into the compact in order to assure that in no case would a jurisdiction suddenly be disadvantaged by other people ganging up on it, which you can do by changing the formula by which money is distributed and contributed by the various jurisdictions. And if you didn't have some mechanism that allowed somebody to say, no, 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 you can't change that formula and make me the one that's got to pay, you'd have a problem inherently. And you're going to have it whether there's a veto or not. It was there so that two jurisdictions couldn't say to a third jurisdiction, well, we're going to change your service levels. Because each jurisdiction has a need for its own economic vitality, for a service to its people, to have at least some degree of control. And so that ability to effectively veto was recognized rather explicitly when the compact was put together. My experience has been that, in fact, in some ways, consistent with the kind of actions that Mr. Downs is talking about, it has a very salutary effect, and that is, it does force us to reach consensus. It does force us to work together. It does make sure that two jurisdictions can't push around a third. And the reason that it has been used so seldom is because we recognize that need to work together. And so I think the fact that it's there does say something about how we do work together, need to work together, and it's not clear to me that eliminating it would necessarily make things any better or, in fact, any different. And I think that discussion has to go on one way or another, because otherwise we're going to head off in some direction or somebody else will without really understanding what the implications are, and I think there's a lot more to it than what I just said.
Mr. Yule. Mr.
Yule. Thank you. Just to add my jurisdiction's two cents worth to this discussion. And we actually, the City of Alexandria, actually have had a very lengthy discussion, not only by our Transportation Commission, by other interested bodies, but a full discussion, public discussion by the City Council. We actually have a matrix. I thought this was transmitted to the MMATA board at some point. If not, I'll make copies available. We've actually taken every recommendation and analyzed it from what's current, what's the Board of Trade or COGS or recommendation. We have a proposed plan, and then we explain it. But in terms of the veto, we take the position that there should be no veto except in case of annual budget and CIP adoption and fare rate increases. We also say that that a veto can only be used if all board members from one jurisdiction, state, or the D.C., District of Columbia, did not vote yes. And then to further clarify that, we take the position that the existing veto works against making decisions for the good of the whole. I think getting back to what some of others have already said, the veto was useful in getting the original 103-mile system equitably built, but needs to be substantially overhauled because it's not really applicable today. But, however, because WMATA's budget is financed by states and localities, fair and budget decisions would have to have veto routine, but one that would need full jurisdictional consensus to execute. In other words, one person, one member of that jurisdiction should not have the ability to just stop everything for everyone.
Mr. Down, no, I'm sorry. Ms. Hewlett, you didn't want to speak? Okay, sorry. Ms. McKay and then Mr. Down.
Well, I largely agree with what Mr. Yule said. I think the issue here is not really the veto, but the process, as Mr. Dowd was talking about. If it requires a compact amendment, we ourselves are not going to be tasked with changing that. What's more important to me is what we do when we have an impasse and what requires us to stop negotiation. And in the past, and I think why I agree with Mr. Yule, is that we have had instances where one individual has put the brakes on the whole organization and hogtied us all without rational conversation, without give and take of the board members in the best interest of WMATA. And so I think it is absolutely imperative that the four members of the jurisdiction be required if that activity is going to take place. But I think we should have an immediate protocol for when a jurisdiction is aggrieved or feels aggrieved, that we immediately go into a process that Mr. Downs was talking about that's formalized, that the chair sit down, that you begin a mediation, you begin a discussion. Not in some cases we've done that and we've been lucky. There hasn't been a process for it. It's just been, hey, we need to do this. I think we need a process. And I do feel very strongly that it ought to be all members of a compact jurisdiction being on board before you even get to the point that you're looking at a veto, because it is not very functional and not very beneficial to any board to have an individual member hold up the entire organization. And I think it's been misused in the past to do that, and that ought to stop. And one way to stop it is to require the whole jurisdiction, and the other way to stop it is to immediately go into a process by which you can deal with the issue at hand and not just use the veiled threat of a veto to hold up a discussion.
Okay. Other comments on this?
I just want to agree with Mr. Benjamin that the need for consensus, the need to arrive at consensus, the need to get all three jurisdictions on the same page is part of the strength of the authority. But just as he said, we can't have a situation where two jurisdictions gang up on one. We shouldn't have a situation where one jurisdiction gangs up on two. And the process that Mr. Downs suggested could be a good way to achieve that.
So let me check here. What I hear is that in that empty space that Mr. Benjamin identified, it ought to say update procedures or include in procedures some sort of a mediation type process that we would all agree to, at least to try. Does that make everybody feel like we'll, and I think we have to say, you know, we cannot change the fact that the jurisdictional veto exists. It's in the compact. We can't make that go away. We can manage our relationships and our work to address these issues in a less confrontational, more organized manner. Okay? Is that fair? Ms. Hewlett?
Consistent with the board responsibilities. I mean,
yes.
Because if we start emphasizing our fiduciary responsibilities, it all goes back to that. And we should be able, through this procedure, to have a process of trying to work things out. There's no guarantee it'll be successful, but I think usually if we're all regionally focused, there's a way to try to talk through and understand a particular jurisdiction's issues and try to get past that. So I think it's that, consistent with our responsibilities, board responsibilities, will be effective. Because I agree very, very much with Mr. McKay that there have been tremendous problems in the past with the use of it or the threat of the use of it. So, without discussion. Thank you.
Okay. So we'll add that to the list of things. So other than that, you all feel like we're okay on this list of topics. Things are going to arise. I will, to the board members who weren't with us in the orientation that we had, periodically somebody would say, oh, that's another one for the governance committee list. So I've got a running list of stuff. but this is, I also want to make this clear and make sure that everybody's on board with this. We're looking at, between now and May, trying to knock off as much of this as we possibly can, get it to the board for adoption so that it's in place and clear to the public that this is how we intend that this board will conduct itself and focus its work. Is everybody, you know, and May is ambitious, but that's where we're headed. So let me ask then for Loida to pass out the last piece of paper. Do you have the draft upcoming agendas, Loida? No. Maybe you don't. Maybe we've been talking in Greek to each other. One of the things that we worked on last Friday was a upcoming board meetings and with potential topics for the governance committee. I had given it to Nicola. It was one of those things we were floating around last week that we decided we would not give people ahead. So while Loida gets that, let me just check and one additional kind of working agreement that I'm hoping for. Generally speaking, I think talking about governance is good to kind of break into small chunks and have a good conversation, go off and write and bring it back. So rather than scheduling once a month a two-hour meeting, my proposal is that we find an hour each Thursday that we meet to talk about a particular topic related to what our list is. And if we all know ahead of time what that is, and we do a good job of giving you the right documents to look at ahead of time, it's my hope that we can have a fulsome conversation in that hour, and then we'll go back and clean up. So that'll keep us kind of moving along, focused on this work, without having us glaze over at the end, you know, adding this extra committee on to one of the days, which are already pretty long, and trying to spend 2 hours. My experience is people just can't do governance talk for 2 hours. You just kind of get tired of it. So hence, we'll break it up. So is that an okay approach with all of you? Yeah. So I know it will make some of our days slightly longer, but we'll do our best to, working with Kathy, to kind of make sure we are as efficient as possible.
And you'll be advising us exactly which topic.
Well, exactly. And the thing I just asked Loida to get you is a straw man of the topics, at least through, I think, through the end of April, maybe. And we've got some placeholder meetings for when things that spill or take a little longer. And we have put this whole strength and public communication piece on our work plan because it just keeps coming up from a variety of different places. So we'll start that conversation here and then figure out if it needs to end up maybe in customer service or someplace else, but we'll start it in this context. So if that's okay with people. All right, so I guess, does anybody have anything else that they want to make sure is on the plate now? And hopefully Loida will be back in a minute with that that approach to agendas. Mr. Down.
Yeah, I raised the question how we might interact with others who have had suggestions. If we want to do that regularly at meetings or schedule special discussions. But I think we do need some back and forth with the working group and with others as to what we're going to achieve.
I'm open to suggestion about that. My intention relative to actually the drafted bylaws or drafted updated procedures was that we get it to a place we're somewhat comfortable and then we ask for comment, as opposed to my thought was if we just ask people to tell us what they think right now, we would get pretty much what they've already said. And so I thought let us get our act together in terms of writing it down and then ask for comment. And I would do that in the context of it coming to a board meeting so that that comment could be done. But I'm open to other suggestions if people have them. Anybody have thoughts on that, one way or the other? Ms. Porter?
I think that's a good idea, and I think that your approach to it is the right approach. So basically the thought is, if I'm understanding correctly, that we would go ahead and draft our recommendations. They would be sent to the entities that had given us recommendations, and then we would get probably both written, and we would also invite them to come to the meetings to respond so that we could have a back and forth with them at that point. Is that the idea?
No, that's a little different from what I had said.
Okay, I wanted to clarify that.
I guess I was wanting us to get our legs under it a little bit, under ourselves a little bit, and that's why I was saying I don't think we want to do that at every governance committee meeting.
No, I wasn't suggesting
okay.
that. I was sort of saying once we had a thing put together that we could send it to the entities that have given us recommendations.
Yes, and also make it available on the web and all of that. And my thought was if we do that, if we look at our regular board meetings as the moments that we do that, then we're in the position of taking that kind of testimony. And then because we've added an hour for governance, we can then kind of digest it in that on that same day or delay. You know, we can work that part out. But yes, absolutely. Once we're ready to put it for the board to discuss in the board context as opposed to our committee of the whole, which I know feels a little awkward, that would be the point at which I would make sure people had it in advance. But again, we can do it a different way.
Yeah, I think we would benefit from reaction to some of the draft ideas, but I think in the broader scope of governance, you have to see all of it put together before you know whether it's going to work, and that may be the point at which we want to actually interact real time with the various groups.
I think that's very important, because I think that the way Ms. Hines has broken this out, it gives us a lot of working time to come up with some good products, and that puts the master part of what we want to accomplish together. And then that review gives us really, it incorporates to me the larger discussion that we've all wanted to have that is critical for our governance in addition to all of the other pieces. So that way we're coming up with one document or portions of a major document versus the constant feedback.
And this schedule interacts pretty well with the working group's charge to come back to the governors and the mayor in 6 months. By the time they're on target to do that, they can see what we've been up to.
Yeah, and that was purposeful. As I said, we did look at their timeline, and we did think through kind of how do we think we could move this along in an orderly fashion, in a public fashion, so that folks could see our seriousness of intent, I guess how I would characterize it. So what you have before you now is a draft, and what of kind of how we're going to move through this. What I would say to you is, I think at the end of each one of our one-hour meetings, we ought to look at this and say, you know, is this the next thing we should do, or do people have ideas that, in fact, we need to pay attention to something else? With the exception of this week, because it's Thursday and the packet has to go out tomorrow, our intention would be to be sure to include, you know, everything would come to you in the regular Friday distribution. I'm going to ask your indulgence on that for between now and next Thursday. I'm leaving this afternoon for a long planned trip with my husband, and I'm not back till Tuesday morning. So if we promise to get things to you on Wednesday for Thursday, is that sufficient given?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
It's his birthday. I just, you know, it's like, it's okay.
No,
I just
fine.
Didn't, so, but I don't like to spring stuff on people, and I think we all deserve the time to sit and think about it a little before we come, but it's not going to happen this week. So, Mr. Donahue.
In terms of that distribution, you're saying we would have it sometime in advance of next Thursday's meeting. Would it also be, as other items are posted?
If that's the middle of the group, we can do that. We had some conversation about
how things get posted.
Make public. Yeah. So this was posted, but the list, because Ms. Hudgens just finished them, were not. So we'll get ourselves in a cycle here where we're posting the drafts. And for the press and the other people in this room who are listening, I hope what you've seen today is that straw man really means straw man, and that it is not, none of this is in stone at this moment. We are having a conversation about how to move forward, and it's not going to be productive if folks leap on one little thing and don't allow us to do the process that's going to get us to good governance. And that does mean honest, forthright conversation about what we're doing and why we're doing it and how these things relate to each other. So that would be my request to the folks in the room, is help us get through this without doing that. Oh, you're right. Thank you. Okay. Kathy has a great...
We were far into our discussion.
Yeah.
And I think it's important. So I'll move the approval of the Governance Committee work plan.
Second.
Okay. Could I ask Ms. Hudgens if you would entertain that we're going to approve it as amended by two items. One is that we will insert update procedures following the limit jurisdictional veto, so we'll fill in that gap.
Wait a minute, where are we filling?
I'm sorry, on this chart, Mr. Yule,
yeah.
In update jurisdictional veto, where it's blank at the moment,
mm-hmm.
we'll insert update procedures as our placeholder to deal with that.
Right.
And then the second one, is I would recommend actually that R and S be combined and say examine the processes by which writers have access to individual board members and board members respond to writers. Does that capture Mr. McKay? Does that get us close enough for now?
Could I make a suggestion that we say establish procedures? I thought you made an excellent point earlier that we were starting with a blank slate, and perhaps we can set out the procedures that we think would be most beneficial for making...
R and S.
Right.
Okay, that's great with me. So establish procedures by which writers contact board members and board members respond to writers. And because we're saying procedures, I suspect that it may not belong in bylaws, which is the other thing there. So let's change board bylaws to board procedures. For now. And
well,
if we
might be a bylaw.
It might be. That's so you proceed slash bylaws.
Yeah. Right. Right. So let's put board procedures and we'll flag that in the bylaws. We probably want to talk about that a little. Okay? So Mr. Yule.
Yeah. The changes you just outlined to this is what's going to get reflected in this as a motion.
No, the motion is to adopt this.
Oh, not the agenda.
Not that.
All right.
Okay.
The motion
is to adopt this with the changes we've just discussed, if that's okay with the maker and the seconder. Is everybody okay?
Yeah.
Anything else, Ms. Ford?
Are you calling this board procedures or bylaws / board procedures, just for the consistency of us sorting all of these things?
Let's do it with the slash.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was my question. Under R and S, does it say board bylaws / procedures?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
So and R and S become one thing. So we'll have items up through S. Okay. Anybody else have any change they want to make at this point to the plan? Okay. Mr. Downs.
Could I make one suggestion, and it not for today, but a future session of this committee, is that we discuss the board's accountability and responsibilities for the direct management of the Inspector General, the Office of the Secretary and Counsel, because those are delegated responsibilities to the board, and part of governance should be to try to codify the relationships and the performance of each of those functions to the board.
Okay, good. Got it. Okay, are we ready to vote? All those in favor of adopting the plan, please say aye.
Aye.
Are there any nays? Okay, the ayes have it. Thank you very much. All right, is everybody clear kind of on the game plan? Will Mr. Downing?
Yeah, just to make for the record, we're adopting these all as items that will be on an agenda for discussion. We're not committing that we're... as to what action we might take on.
That's right. That's why it says action or expected. Maybe it should say expected action or product. Let's just move that. Is that just little semantics but important. Yeah. We're not, as we go through and we sort, things may end up in different places. I think that's a very fair statement. But this is at least our game plan, and that'll be our guide as we go forward. Is there anything anybody else needs to say?
Yes.
I just need to say.
Oh, going back to this.
Yes, Mr. Yule. Back to the work, the draft agendas.
Yeah. Maybe everything that's on this is developed into this agenda schedule, but I just want to make sure that, as a for instance, and I assume it's under the straw man bylaws, chair and board member responsibilities for the February 24th meeting to be discussed. As an example, item F, examine the role of alternate members and update as appropriate.
Yes, and what I need to do, and it's a really good point, Mr. Yule, is I'll go back now and sort all these
topics.
Yeah, I
was going to say, that would be helpful to make sure that everything is being covered.
That would be... actually, I think useful for all of us.
Yes.
And we may not have a total straw man on the bylaws, but what I'm thinking is we'll have a structure that's similar. We just approved bylaws for the accessibility committee. Ms. Hudgens and I have talked. We think we can probably use that same structure and then begin to pull things from various places to flesh it out. So that's the notion of how far we'll get on that. So part of what you'll be asked to do on the bylaws is, do you think we have the right topics in here, you know, so we can continue to keep pulling and fleshing that out. And then we'll highlight some of the topics that are on our work plan list for more intensive conversation on next Thursday, okay? That makes sense? All right. Ms. Hudgens, did you?
I just wanted to thank you for getting us off on such a good start. I think we've gotten started, and I appreciate the work that you and Ms. Porter have done and look forward to it, because I think it's a great opportunity for us.
Well, I want to thank everybody for the great conversation today. I expected no less, given the experience I've had so far. But I think this was really productive, so I'm really pleased. Mr. Starles, anything you want to say to close us up? Okay.
Mary?
Yes,
unrelated question for the general manager before we conclude. In light of the House's action on Capitol Hill with the FRIA funding, we had asked for something more specific that outlined, you know, what would happen if this funding is not continuing to come from the federal government. And I just didn't know if we were close to having that or not. Many of us are meeting with folks in our delegation as we speak. I've got a couple meetings set up, and I just wanted to make sure we're going to get that soon so that we have
yes,
it.
Yes, you will. We're very close. We've gone through it a couple of times, and I'd say within a matter of a couple of days you'll have it.
Okay, good. Thank you.